Yes, it's that time of the week. It's come round again, and I'm joined by Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
How are you, my dear?
I'm great, thank you. Lovely That's to lovely. See you.
Lovely to see you.
Yeah, you're all always lovely.
There, revving the listeners up.
That's right. Now, Dennis, last week you concluded the program by talking about the famous American herb echinacea.
Yes.
Today you want to talk about two other famous American herbs which you consider remarkable in their therapeutic benefits, slippery elm and golden seal. Why are they famous?
Well, they're famous because in the practice of Western herbalism, without access to those two herbs, arguably we would not be able to treat many of the conditions that we do treat and increasingly treat. They form the backbone of many protocols that properly trained herbalists fall back on, and without them, as I've already said, it would be very, very difficult to achieve the results that we do. Together with echinacea, and I thought about this morning, how I would couch it, together with echinacea, probably the best known North American herb, slippery elm and golden seal provide what I consider to be a trilogy of such importance that they are arguably the backbone of the system of medicine that most English-speaking countries have adopted. Even though they're North American herbs, as a quirk of history, so to speak, they have now become, over a couple of hundred years, the backbone of herbal medicine as practiced in virtually all English-speaking countries, America, Canada, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia. We all adopt the American spectrum as the panorama of herbs that we fall back on. A lot of people say, well, how did that happen? Very interesting history as to how that did happen. And it goes back to the frontiersman known as Samuel Thompson, who was an American who lived in the 1700s, and he went to the US and was overwhelmed by the amount of disease and the horrific treatments that were offered for many of the diseases by mainstream medicine at that time. And so he began to study the remedies of the American Red Indians and began to use those initially in the treatment and management of his own family with great success. As a result of that, people began to go to him and ask for help and ask him what herbs he was using, how to use them. People were frantic at times to resolve diseases for which there was no real mainstream medication. And so they took on Thompson's system. In fact, Thompson expanded his armory of herbs, not just to include echinacea, golden seal and slippery elm, but to a whole panorama of herbs made famous, of course, by the indigenous population. Many herbs we use, not just these three, are based on the American continent, herbs like scorvine, black cohosh, blue cohosh, a lot of American herbs, many of which I've had the privilege of seeing and, in fact, growing some of them myself. Fascinating to do. And so that system took off there. As a result of that, this cross-continent situation that was taking place, people moving from the UK to the US settlers and vice versa, as a result of that, what became known as the Thompsonian system was taken back to the UK, where the UK became a leading exponent of Thompson's ideas and the use of the herb, particularly in working-class areas in the UK. People flocked to it, A, because they couldn't afford mainstream medicine, and B, it was a system of medicine that they related to. They were folksy people, working-class people, not a great deal of money, and a lot of herb shops, so to speak, set up in working-class areas of the UK. And in turn, the UK became, in fact, the saviour of Thompson's system, because eventually in the US, the American Medical Association lobbied the government to stop the practice of herbal medicine on the grounds that it was practiced largely by non-medical people. And it was the UK, by virtue of being under the crown and in its practice of common law, and what Henry VIII said in his reign, that they said there was no way that that was going to happen, and they fell back in the House of Commons on the charter that Henry VIII gave to herbalists, a a copy of which I have in my consulting room, which still today is seen as a good support structure for the system of herbal medicine developed by Thompson, saved in the United Kingdom and protected by Henry VIII initially, but his benefits still linger on. Terrible man that he probably was. He certainly loved women, but it was, well, I don't know if he loved them, but he certainly used women. But the last of his wives helped greatly when he was obese, disease-ridden, legs swollen up like elephant legs, full of ulcers, nearly killed by mainstream medicine with their use of terrible substances, bled till he nearly had no blood left in him. That was a favourite treatment in those days. And it was one of his wives that used calendula or greater marigold. We grow it, but she used it knowing how it worked and bathed his ulcers, cured his ulcers, reduced some of the swelling, and as a result of gratitude to her and herbal medicine.
She kept her head?
She did. She survived. But, yeah, so interesting history. But these three herbs I consider to represent in a trilogy form, Echinacea, Slippery Elm and Golden Seal, as a trilogy that represents the work of Thompson and the development of Western herbal medicine, particularly in English-speaking countries, and supported initially, I suspect still supported, indirectly by the Crown.
Okay, well, we'll continue
That's
talking.
Why I'm a monarchist.
That's, well, God, I'm a bless, monarchist too.
God bless King Charles. God bless King Charles.
Oh, dear, I just love the drama.
Oh, no, I love it for other purposes. I love it for other purposes. Fair Great enough. Defender of our freedoms.
Yes, that's true. Like Lynn from Weston has done. Hi, Lynn, how can we help you?
Hi. Dennis, a friend of mine suggested that I take a teaspoon of borax dissolved in water to alleviate the pain of arthritis in my fingers.
Oh, Lynn, I'd be cautious about that. I don't think borax is very safe, put it that way. Look, I'm not disputing what your dear friend has said. She may know something more about borax than what I do. As I keep saying to listeners, I'm not a bad herbalist, but I don't know much about anything else. So if she's using this, I would just caution her to use it very, very, very cautiously.
Everything I've read, it sounds pretty wary.
I need to look at this, but I think, in fact, you will find that in Australia it's prohibited to be used as a therapeutic good or therapeutic entity. I stand correction, but I would warn you and listeners, look, don't go there. Don't go there, Lynn. There are other ways of addressing arthritis with herbs and some dietary factors, even the ongoing use of cod liver oil. But I would be very cautious about this, Lynn.
Okay. I won't be taking it then. Thank you very much.
Okay, Lynn.
Thanks, Lynn. Appreciate your call. Bye. Okay. Next we've got Graham from – hang on. Let me get it to work. There we go. Graham from Raworth. Hi, Graham. How can we help you?
Hi, Amanda. No, look, I just had a little part to pass on to Dennis. When I first started in pharmacy, it was one of my favourite labels in the dispensary.
It was
labelled Court Olmi Fulv Polv, powdered slippery elm bark.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
I never forgot it.
Isn't that
and
lovely?
There was a little rhyme,
isn't that
it?
Lovely? That
in
makes
the pharmacy,
my day.
There was a little rhyme and it said, if as a chemist you must thrive, do not give more than minimus 5 of Acon, Strophanth, Prussic Bill. For more makes patients very ill.
It would indeed. I know what those substances are all about there, but I'm fascinated, Graham. Do you still practice pharmacy or have you stopped?
No, look, I've retired some years ago.
Oh, what a pity.
I have been, a listener and a devotee of yours for many, many years because you used to train a lot of pharmacists.
I did. I did, in fact. Just before I left home this morning, I was looking at an ointment that I have made or had made for many, many, many years that was made by a very close pharmacy colleague of mine who actually studied a postgraduate program in herbal medicine at Sydney Uni years and years ago, and Bob became almost part of our family and was responsible for making up virtually all of my medicines for my patients. And
I know who you're speaking of.
Yeah, of course you would. And I would say this, that I've had a great life in therapy. My whole life has been fairly multifaceted. It's difficult for people at times to realise that I started off as an apprentice and qualified as a tradesman, as a fitter, and I think that was the best learning experience of my life. I then graduated to study professional engineering, and then fortunately being in Sydney at the right time, I was caught up in the wave of interest in natural medicine, and I qualified in Sydney as a herbalist and a naturopath. But if I had my time over, Graham, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't go and study medicine. Much as I love my medical colleagues, I would go and study pharmacy. The problem basically is that all my old pharmacy colleagues, and you're probably in the same vintage as me, probably not as old, but all my old pharmacy colleagues tell me, I stand correction on this, that what I understand of pharmacy is the older style of pharmacy, where pharmacognosy used to be taught at Sydney University,
yeah.
Where and you would know the lady who was the primary lecturer in that.
I know her very well because my dad taught her son.
Oh, is that a fact? we could talk all day about this, but yes, I had my time over. But having said that, oh, you've really got me started, Graeme. Having said that, I have become the beneficiary over so many years of many of the textbooks, the British Pharmacopoeia, the British Pharmaceutical Codex, Martindale, all those things that you would know. Yes. I have a library that's full of those books from my colleagues who have passed on and who left their books for me. And I've got so many of them that when I pass on, which probably won't be too much longer, I don't know where they're going to go, plus the fact people don't read today. They're all on the net. But a lot of that information which would have got you a start and you used, it's treasured, Graham. It is treasured. You've had a privilege.
Look, I had a wonderful life. And
good.
I compound all the time because not a lot of pharmacists went away from compounding.
Yes, I know.
And it became hard to find them. And then medicos, if you were compounding, would send you patients to save them getting phone calls.
Exactly right. It was a great tragedy. I saw the change, and many of the pharmacy people that I taught, some of them were the last lingering group of pharmacists that were still making their own ointments, their own creams, and making up some of the mixtures that people traditionally in the past utilised so frequently. Oh, Graham, we could talk all day. We could talk all day. But never mind.
I just thought I'd pass on a few.
Isn't that lovely? Yeah, well, pass on anything. Your experience is valuable, not only to me, but also for those many listeners and also those younger pharmacists out there that are interested in some of the old style. And I see hints of that, believe it or not, Graham. I see hints of that coming back now with pharmacists seeming to play a more a traditional role, consulting people, talking to them and making up mixtures. God bless them. Let's hope it keeps going.
Consulting with people.
Yes.
You know, that builds your image and it's the most important thing.
Absolutely. God bless you, Graham.
Thanks, Graham. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
That was a great call.
That was lovely.
I enjoyed talking to Graham.
Yeah. Got Jill from East Maitland on the line. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you going?
Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
I've heard Dennis speak about urinary tract infections in the past, but I can't remember what he said about them. That's what I want to know.
Okay. Jill, you suffer them fairly frequently, do you?
Off and on, yes.
Yes. Look,
I'm tired of taking antibiotics.
Sure. Look, there's a lot that can be done with natural medicine to break into the regularity of urinary tract infections. Any acute infection, obviously, is wise to be treated medically with an antibiotic, but the best treatment for chronic urinary tract infections is to seek to stop their occurrence. And this is where I think we can do it. I'll give you a couple of little things that might be of use to you. The one of the remedies these days that is a recently new innovation, and you can Google it and see a lot more about it than what I'm going to tell you, is a powder known as D-mannose, D-mannose, M-A-N-O-S-E, D-mannose. Now, that has been somewhat of a breakthrough in recent times as a very safe supplement of a substance known as D-mannose, which is a benign, very safe, sugary type of powder that's ingested either as a powder in teaspoonful dosages, or you can get it these days also in capsules or even tablets. I'm a fan of using it in a powdered form, and using it preventatively, take about 5 grams of it daily. It's very, very safe. I've never found any of my patients have had any trouble with it. There's a mountain of information on it. I would suggest, Jill, if you're interested in getting a paper, an article that explains its discovery and how it works and what it does, ring my rooms in New Lambton and they'll send you a copy of the paper, and this goes for any listener, free of charge, so that you can read on what you have to say, on what I have to say about it. But D-mannose is what I consider now to be a frontline remedy to break into chronic or recurring urinary tract infections, principle number one. However, there are a group of other remedies also of a more traditional nature. One of the most important remedies is a herb called buku, B-U-C-H-U. Now, buku is a South African herb, and it has even been used in mainstream medicine and occurs in the older editions of the British Pharmacopoeia and the British Pharmaceutical Codex, very popularly used prior to the advent of modern antibiotics. It can actually address some levels of acute infection of the urinary tract. So I say to many of my patients, clients and listeners, use the D-mannose as an attempt to break through the recurrence of the urinary tract infection. But secondarily, have some buku on your shelf, so to speak. If you still get some symptoms that indicate there is a breakout, accelerate your dose of D-mannose to about double, but at the same time, begin to use buku preparations. Buku tea is the oldest way of using it, where you make a tea of the dried leaves. Very pleasant tea. Use that. Okay. That will help stop the assertion of the infection and give you independence and only need to fall back on the antibiotic if and when it occurs. That's a good starting base for you, those two to kick off with.
Yeah, okay. That sounds really good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jill.
Thanks a lot, Jill. We've got Amanda from Mayfield on the line. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how you going?
Good, thank you. You want to talk about remedies for high cholesterol?
Yes, I do. Yes, my love of baked goods and all the good things in life are playing a bit of a havoc, I think, with my cholesterol.
Let me ask you a question, Amanda. What level of cholesterol have you?
7.2.
Okay. That's a bit more than moderately elevated. We try to work around 5.2, 5.5.
Yes.
Has your doctor prescribed for it?
I do have an underactive thyroid, so I don't know if that is impacting it, but, it's a bit of concern, I guess.
You are at a level that you really need to discuss with your GP. Sometimes it is necessary to use what are called the statins in order to get the condition under control.
Uh-huh.
And then it may be possible to move on to what I call some of the softer stuff. Having said that, it may be worthwhile if you are able to access some cholesterol reading yourself via your pharmacy. It is worthwhile doing a couple of simple things that are not expensive and would certainly not clash with anything your doctor might do, although if you were placed on a statin, it, in my opinion, probably wouldn't be worthwhile using this technique because statins are so, very, very targeted in getting cholesterol down quickly. But two things to do. Don't overlook the importance of what's called soluble fibre And their preparations based on what's called beta-glucan, G-L-U-C-A-N. Uh-huh. Now, the idea behind that is that various forms of fibre, particularly oat bran and oat fibre, if you like, bind to cholesterol in the gut and precipitate its exit. So using fibre and a high fibre diet, beta-glucan and products based on it, which are readily available from your pharmacy, by the way, they have a contribution if used daily and religiously. I have people say, oh, yes, look, I've used these things before and they didn't do anything. But when you talk to them, they didn't do anything because they were not taken regularly and seen as part of a therapeutic process. But fibrous preparations, the beta-glucans and products named after that, I have found are useful to be able to drag the overall cholesterol level down by maybe 1, maybe 2 points. And I've seen that in my practice happen for the cynics out there that question that. So that's one way of starting the process. You can tell your doctor what you're doing there. And secondarily, there are plant-based substances known as phytosterols, P-H-Y-T-O, phyto meaning plant, and sterols. Now, these substances are fairly well known, even in nutritional areas, in as much that what they tend to do is limit the I'll use simple terminology. They limit or inhibit the reabsorption of cholesterol from the large bowel. In other words, they interfere with the circular process. They lessen the amount of cholesterol that's in the system by stopping its reabsorption and interfering, if you like, with the production of cholesterol. Now, I'm talking very simply and in very lay language, but they inhibit the reabsorption of cholesterol and indirectly contribute to a lowering of cholesterol. Put those two things together and you have two different ways of addressing moderately elevated cholesterol. That, together with lifestyle modification, may be able to get you closer down to that 5.5 level. I must say, the readings that I do on this whole topic of cholesterol, and I've just finished reading an excellent work written by a very, very knowledgeable British medical practitioner. He's referred to, I think he's called his book, The Cholesterol Con. But the more I read of it, the more I'm convinced, that we are overemphasizing it. Now, that's a big call, and I'll be shot out of the water for saying it. But but in that text, this brilliant doctor, the book is worth reading for anyone who's interested, particularly for medical practitioners who want to keep abreast of what some of their colleagues are writing about the too quick prescribing of statins, needs to be read, because this gentleman would say that a moderately elevated cholesterol level in most women is not a big thing. That's his view. I must say I tend to support that, but you must work with your GP, as I keep saying. I would suggest you have a yarn with your GP, tell him what you intend to do. I'm sure that there will be cooperation, and he will be happy to monitor to see if what you're doing gets you down to a point where it's more acceptable to him or her.
Okay, thank you so much for your call, Amanda. I really appreciate it. Next on the line, we've got Denise from East Maitland. Hi, Denise. How can we help you?
Hello.
Hello, Denise.
Hello, Dennis.
Yes.
Nice to speak to you.
It's a pleasure.
Dennis, I have a grandson who has an underactive thyroid, and of course he's my grandson, so anything I can do to help or advise him. Is there any herbal remedies that can assist? I don't even know how an underactive thyroid...
How old is your grandson, Denise?
Oh, he's a man. He's he's 34.
Okay. If he's has an underactive thyroid, it's likely that he's already on medication for it. And I would suggest that if he's not on medication, that he sees his GP and either gets a referral to an endocrinologist, or maybe the GP himself could prescribe for it. I know a fair bit about the thyroid because my wife has battled thyroid problems most of her life. Look, I must say, in the area of thyroid management, I consider the mainstream approach to be very, very successful and very, very useful. And I would say, look, don't fiddle with the condition. It is something that can be treated very effectively, I would say, using the mainstream medical approach, which can be initially oral medication and maybe move up the ladder a bit if that doesn't take. Now, look, this is one condition, along with many others, that I recommend people to seek help from the modern approach to it.
Through his doctor.
Yes. His doctor would probably know that he has a underactive thyroid because...
He does. Yeah. He does, Dennis. He knows.
Yes.
So Dane would be, my grandson, would be on medication.
Yes.
But
yes.
I just thought there may be a herb that could help along the way.
If he's on the medication, and I know the medication, it's usually very successful.
Thank you so much.
Very successful.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
I have
Denise.
Another question for
yes.
you, but I will
yes.
come next week and speak to you again.
Oh, there you go.
Thank
I'll be
you.
Happy to talk to you.
Thanks, Denise.
Yes,
appreciate it.
Dennis.
Have a great day. Bye. Okay, we've got Roslyn from Karoo on the line. Hi, Roslyn. You want to talk about rooting for achy legs?
Yes. Hi, Dennis.
Hello,
nice to
Roslyn.
Talk to you.
Yes. Nice to talk to you, my dear.
I imagine you would be familiar with a product called Paravan Fort.
Yes.
I've been on that for about 100
yes.
years.
Yes.
After I had my three kids,
yes.
I sort of had achy, jumpy.
Yes.
Not terrible, but annoying legs.
Yes.
And a very old lady who was taking Paravan Fort suggested I try it, and I did, and it worked.
Yes.
Worked really. I just take one a day.
Yes.
And it's gone off the market.
Yeah, I thought
probably.
It had. I used to know a lot of patients that used that. I think, in fact, rutin was part of it.
Yes.
I
thought I wanted to ask you,
yes.
was rutin sort of the main ingredient?
I would think it would.
That's
be.
What I thought.
What I have a very old edition of MIMS back
yep.
in my office.
Yes.
Again, these older books are my standbys. Now, I'm sure there would be the outline of all the actives in that very useful, I think it was an over-the-counter product.
Yes, it was,
But rutin, I think you'll find, was the leading remedy, and rutin, R-U-T-I-N, is a particular bioflavonoid. Now, bioflavonoids are renowned for their supportive effect on compromised circulatory systems.
Okay, yeah.
So if you can't access that product, which I'm sad about, I would suggest have a talk to your pharmacist, see what products on rutin, although they would be known as ruticides in the pharmacy language,
yep.
see what he has, because I prescribe rutin as part of a bioflavonoidal complex that, in fact, I use myself.
Oh, right,
so
yeah.
I would say you're on the money. I will check when I get back to my rooms this morning. And if you ring my rooms later this afternoon, I might be able to give you more information on it.
Okay.
But rutin, I would be suggesting giving it a go.
Have you got any idea why it went off the market?
Oh, look, I can only give an opinion on this. I think it's because, like so many of these products...
too successful?
Well... I've got to be cautious what I say.
I know,
but
you do.
Look, because I suspect it was very close, in my opinion, to being a natural product.
Yeah.
And not a big money spinner, perhaps.
Okay.
And all aspects of pharmacy and medicine, and even our system of medicine these days, has to factor in costs, etc. I think that might have been the issue, but it was a very successful product. And a similar product was used for hemorrhoids.
Thank you so much for your call, Rosalind. Really appreciate it. We have Alicia from Glendale on the line. Hi, Alicia.
Hi. I have a question for Dennis, just regarding my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
She's in touch with her doctor, and she has very severe vaginal thrush and has been given the... I don't know too much. But what I have been told is she's on like one tablet a month, apparently, like mm-hmm. it must be strong. And they've given her the tablet to take over 3 months, mm-hmm. But she's under severe stress at the moment with her partner in palliative, her husband in palliative. So I was wondering, she's very open to supporting her body in other ways. I wasn't sure if you could, if it was possible to treat it the same as a urine tract, like the caller before.
Well, some of the herbs would be useful for that, in my opinion. But my approach here is to support the medical approach with topical applications. That's a cream or a lotion based on a very small percentage of tea tree oil. Now that might that might sound rather a bit left field, and it is. But I years ago, one of my pharmacy colleagues, in conjunction with myself, we developed a cream known as Vaginol, and it is based and it is not a retail product, but I use it in my practice where appropriate. It has given very, very sound results for some of the symptoms of thrush, as you call it. I'm quite happy to supply it to you with your doctor's nod, but that would only be supportive. But it has, over the years, allowed many dear women to experience unparalleled relief from some of the wretched symptoms associated with vaginal thrush. A small percent in an ointment or a cream base. Your pharmacy, a compounding pharmacist, may well be able to do that for you.
Oh, right. Yeah, because all the creams and lotions you've tried over the counter and different things, nothing has even come close to giving relief.
Well, the good old tea tree oil is remarkable for so many conditions with this sort of pathology behind it. I know it works, but you must run it past your medical managers because mum needs to work with a doctor with a condition.
Absolutely, yeah. She's very in touch with
I understand.
Her. That's wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, Alicia.
Thanks so much, Alicia. Okay, last call. We've got Mark from Toronto on the line. Hi, Mark. We've only got a few minutes or a couple of minutes, if you could be quick.
Thank you. Hi, how are you going?
Hello, Mark.
Yep. Look, I've been having some issues recently, and I've just had was quite sick. I've been to the doctor, had an ultrasound and blood test, and I found that I've got a fatty liver and pancreas. Mm-hmm. I am diabetic and take various medication, including statins.
Yes.
He doesn't seem to want to. He said the next step we need to do is an MRI to find out. But I went to the chemist, and they put me onto Caruso's. Milk thistle 3500. Mm-hmm. We're taking for about a week, and the pain seems to subside. I was just wondering what else I could try to help with this.
Well, that's a very good preparation, and that range of products under that brand name is excellent. The use of what's called St. Mary's thistle, botanically known as Salebum marianum, is well known, particularly in Europe, as the leading remedy to address particularly fatty liver. A remarkable remedy. I did the first lectures on it in Australia probably 40, 50 years ago, where it wasn't even known at that stage. But for any a liver disease of a degenerative or a dysfunctional nature, the taking of St. Mary's thistle on its own, I don't think I'd fiddle with anything else because there's nothing in my knowledge that could compete with it.
So it's a pretty good product. The chemist said, because I had a lot of other medication, like for diabetes and blood pressure and stuff like that. But I'm just sort of wondering, does
we'll have to be quick,
like,
Mark. Sorry.
So you're definitely just stay on that sort of product and see how it goes, and how long should I stay on for it, do you think?
Well, I think I'd stay on for a while, get regular liver function tests, and I'd suggest you get a scan, see what your doctor says.
Okay, good luck with that, Mark. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Dennis, we are out of time. We'll have to talk about slippery elm next week.
We'll do it next time.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.